keeping you apprised of our community's going-ons. If you approve, or even if you don't, send your comments to app@kpft.org. Once applied, the KPFT app will have you applauding the ease of listening, donating, and keeping up with KPFT. One thing is apparent, here is a new way to listen to KPFT on any smartphone, Android, or Apple. KPFT Houston, the appropriate destination for your ears.
Hi, I'm Mel.
And I'm Ro.
We're from Shame on Me.
And you're listening to KPFT Houston.
Welcome to another edition of the Progressive Forum. The Progressive Forum covers issues such as human rights, the environment, politics, and peace and justice, in addition to presenting news, commentary, and a weekly calendar of events.
Good evening. This is Lillian Kerr, and you have tuned in to the Progressive Forum here on KPFT 90.1 FM Pacifica Station right here in Houston, Texas. Thanks for joining us tonight. On tonight's show, we will start off with our regular segment from Jim Hightower. Then I'll be speaking with Catherine Spiller, who is the executive editor of Ms. Magazine, as well as the executive editor and co-founder of the Feminist Majority Foundation. And we're just going to review the year in review of 2025, kind of do a rundown of that as we wind down this year. Then we will have my regular segment, A Bird's Eye View, followed by another segment from historian Heather Cox Richardson. And then taking us to the top of the hour will be our news with Larry Krizan. We hope you can stay with us for the whole hour. So let's get things started off with Jim Hightower.
Ho, ho, ho. Wait till you hear about the gifts I'm giving to some of America's power elites for Christmas. To each of our Congress critters, I give my fondest wish that from now on they receive the exact same income, health care, and pensions that we average citizens get. If they receive only the American average, it might make them a little bit more humble and less cavalier about ignoring the needs of regular folks. To the stockings of GOP leaders who've so eagerly debased themselves to serve the madness of Donald Trump, I'm adding individual spritzer bottles of fragrances like Essence of Integrity and Eau de Self-Respect to help cover up their stench. And in the stockings of Democratic congressional leaders, I'm giving Spice of Viagra and Bouquet du Grassroots to stiffen their spines and remind them of who they represent. For America's CEOs, my gift is a beautifully boxed brand new set of corporate ethics. It's called the Golden Rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Going to pollute someone's neighborhood? Then you have to live there too. Going to slash wages and benefits? Then slash yours as well. Going to move your manufacturing to sweatshops in China? Then put your office right inside the worst sweatshop. Executive life won't be as luxurious, but CEOs would glow with a new purity of spirit. To the Wall Street hedge fund hucksters who've conglomerated, plundered, and degraded hundreds of America's newspapers, I'm sending copies of Journalism for Dummies and offering jobs for each of them in their stripped-down Dickensian newsrooms. This is Jim Hightower saying, and what better gift to the Trump family, Donald, Ivanka, and Jared, Eric, Donnie Jr., and the whole nest of them, than to wish that they live with each other constantly and permanently? No, really, no need to thank me. Each of you deserve it.
Thank you, Jim Hightower, spelling it out as usual. Welcome again to the Progressive Forum. My name is Lillian Kerr, and tonight I have the pleasure of speaking with Catherine Spiller, editor of Ms. Magazine and founder of the Feminist Majority Foundation. Thanks for joining us this evening, Catherine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I just might add,
yes.
Born and raised in Texas.
Say that again?
Born and raised in Texas.
Really?
Yes. In fact, born in Houston. Spent most of my growing up years in San Antonio and Austin. Went to school at TCU in Trinity, but left the state in 1980. So I have fond, memories of Texas.
Do you miss it?
I have great hopes for Texas. I don't miss the politics. I'm ashamed of what Texas politics has become, but I know it's making a comeback, and I'm rooting for it because
yes.
I believe it should be back in the blue category as it used to be.
Yes. Well, I think we're going to delve into the year in review, but something that I'm not a native Texan, Kathy, but it's so interesting living here because there is such quirkiness, and maybe that can be another show. There's, we have the Texas Observer, we had Molly Ivins, we had, the Atheist Foundation and all this stuff, that was here with all, sort of commingling with all these far right people. So Texas is always, I find it fascinating. And as you mentioned, I think this fall, 2026 could be, should produce some interesting surprises.
I think it can. I do. The problem in Texas politics is that the governor and the statewide office holders and the legislature are the captives of the oil industry.
Yes.
And so you've got, the gerrymandered state legislature so that Democrats hardly have a chance to get elected, despite the fact that, every city is deep blue.
Yep.
Every city has had Democratic mayors elected. In fact, most of the cities have had women mayors elected. Feminists.
I know.
And of course, Ann Richards was governor and a very strong feminist. So, again, I think that as Texans, look deep at the forces that are controlling their lives in a bad way, we can fight back. And that's the hope, is that this year in 2026 can be a real fight back year.
Yes, let's hope so. So that brings us to our topic of the evening, Kathy. So we have the current president took office in November 24, and this year, 25, has been, how does one describe it? Somebody said the bandwidth for outrage and disgust and sadness has been completely maximized. Do I have any more room to feel these things?
Well, it has been a very tough year. Started off the moment he took office in January. It has been one blow to fundamental rights and democracy and our values. One blow after another. But here, there is good news.
Okay.
There is very good news. And I will get to that. But I wanted to start with, the bad stuff that has happened this year and just remind people what we're going to have to rebuild and recover when we get the chance. And I hope that we get the chance very soon.
Yes.
So should I just jump in?
Jump in. You've got the mic.
Right. Okay. So 3 days after he takes office, Trump pardoned 23 anti-abortion extremists who had violently attacked clinics in about 4 or 5 different states and were serving prison sentences that had been secured under the Biden Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of days later, the Department of Justice got rid of the remaining 3 cases that they had involving a number of extremists and announced that they would no longer be enforcing the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances law unless there was extenuating circumstances like a murder when anti-abortion extremists are attacking the clinics. And so what we've seen since is an escalation in clinic violence and threats and attacks because they feel they have a green light. And in fact, they do when it comes to the federal law enforcement authorities. But they're not going to get away with it, and I'll talk about that.
Okay.
We have watched as this administration has repeatedly attacked access to the abortion pill, mifepristone.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to undertake a study at the FDA on its safety, which is a joke. This pill has been used and studied for more than 50 years. It is widely used all over the world for early abortion.
And the FDA approved it.
Absolutely. After forcing U.S. Pharmaceutical to do its own research, even though, you know, they came to the FDA in the mid-late 90s with decades of research that had already been done in France and in other countries. It's available all over the world. During the pandemic, the restrictions were lessened on being able to mail abortion pills and using telehealth to prescribe abortion pills. And I will say that has dramatically increased its usage. It's now about 63% of all abortions. And yet this administration is determined to crack down, to restrict, if not to totally eliminate access. They're not going to get away with it, and that's the good news. I will go back to that when we get to the good news. So they've also, of course, we watched as hundreds of thousands of federal workers were laid off with no notice.
No, I know. And some of which had to, some of whom had to be rehired because they realized they'd made some mistakes.
Exactly. And it hit women very hard, especially Black women.
Were
hit very hard. You know, whole departments were eliminated or destroyed or partially destroyed, including the Department of Education, which has been very important for the advancement of women and girls. Title IX is enforced. By the Department of Education. Of course, there's no enforcement going on right now.
Well, there won't be a Department of Education much longer, right?
Well, not much longer if they get away with it.
Technically,
it takes an act of Congress. It was a department that was established by Congress, and so technically Congress has to vote to get rid of it, which will not happen, but this administration is barreling ahead. You're right. They're eliminating everything they can. And families are suffering, especially parents of disabled kids, that all that assistance has been cut off. LGBTQ attacks, of course, by this administration through the Department of Education. And we've seen attacks on women's and gender studies programs all across the country.
I mean, it just comes at you every direction. And, of course, not to even mention the horrific and actions that have been going on around the country. But I guess, you know, it is heartening to see how different cities all around the U.S. have responded in their unique, different ways. And
Absolutely.
I think that's been very encouraging because I think Americans won't stand for this.
No, I totally agree. And that is a big part of the good news is the resistance is massive and widespread.
Yes.
A little bit more of the bad news.
Yes.
The big so-called beautiful bill, which really is a disaster, a devastating disaster for women and children.
Right.
It cut the food assistance program. 42 million people are impacted by the cuts. 57% of those people are women. And, of course, it's women who are responsible for the children in that program that are cut off. The school lunch program's cut. The women in infants program, feeding program cut back. Meals on Wheels, which elderly women disproportionately depend on, cut. So, again, what was in this big, beautiful bill, the cuts, are disproportionately impacting women and their children.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that also contained huge cuts to Medicaid, which is a government-supported health insurance program.
Yeah.
$900 billion cut out of it, the largest in history. And again, you've got 11.8 million people who will lose their Medicaid coverage. A lot of those are women and children. And rural hospitals are closing because they can't afford to stay open because they depend on Medicaid reimbursements for the health services.
And they're providing a service.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, in many of these red areas, they are losing their hospitals and they're losing their maternity wards so that the women who are wanting to have children are going to have to leave those areas to secure the health care that they need. And then, of course, they specifically targeted defunding Planned Parenthood as part of that bill. So all of that, and then that isn't even touching on the damage that was done globally with the collapse of USAID
right.
and the cutoff of all of the funding that was provided globally. And, you know, that is millions will die. Millions
mm-hmm.
are already,
have already
hundreds
died.
Hundreds of thousands
yeah.
are already dying.
Yeah.
It is very short-sighted because what's happening in some parts of the world is these extremist entities, these militias, are moving in to provide those services that the U.S. used to fund.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, terrorism will spread.
Yeah.
And so it's so short-sighted for our own national interest as that we've cut off what's this is known as soft power.
Mm-hmm.
You are helping people and countries who need that help to develop. And it's a very short-sighted strategy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
so
my goodness.
That's a lot of the bad news.
Yes.
And then, of course, everybody is facing right now an increase in their health insurance premiums because of what the Republicans have done to not extend the tax credits for the Affordable Care Act policy. So that is a disaster unfolding before our very eyes right now.
Very, very distressing for so many people. And then not to mention another bad thing we have to mention is the Department of Health and Human Services, who is headed
yes.
by him, you know who,
mm-hmm.
and the news,
mm-hmm.
the new position that this government is taking on vaccinations and the guidelines that have come out that have infectious disease doctors so concerned.
Yes. And rightly so. You
yes.
had these terrible outbreaks in Texas of measles,
yes.
and including deaths of children. And that's just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to get worse as we go. And it's all just incredible that we would throw out the window all of the science, all of the medicine that has made the U.S. A first-rate
yes.
health
with a gold standard. The rest
absolutely.
Of the world used to look to us.
Yeah, no more.
No.
The very sad thing is I heard the other day one of the leading virologists in the country that works with children especially saying, you know, he's very sad to say it, but you cannot believe anything coming out of the FDA or the CDC. The CDC
no.
said don't believe any of the guidance. Very sadly, you've got to look to other sources that rely on science and good medicine.
So. Yeah, very, very concerning. So, but let's also talk about, and then we'll get to the good stuff, Kathy, but
okay.
in the current issue of Ms. Magazine, which is chock-a-block full of some very good articles, but Kathy Spiller, our guest, actually has an article about Project 2026 and its
yeah.
war on women's rights. So if you thought 2025 was bad, let's hold on.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
They really intend to go after women's voting rights. You know, they want to push forward this thing called the SAVE Act, which is going to require a woman to prove her citizenship. And if she doesn't have original documents that are exactly the same as her current driver's license, for example, if a woman's been married and changed her name, she's in trouble in terms of being able to present the kind of evidence that they're going to want of citizenship. So it's going to hurt especially elderly women in their ongoing ability to vote. And, of course, they, you know, it's Project 2026 wants to do what 25 didn't finish yet when it comes to cutting off access to abortion, access to some forms of contraception. They want to define as abortion. So we've got some real fights ahead.
We
know how to fight, and you know we've been meeting them in court, on the streets,
mm-hmm.
and in every which way. And you know the fight goes on.
It really does. But it's so. Do you think there seem to be signs of? I mean, the Congress was rolling over and letting the president do whatever he wanted. But now, are there signs? Am I being overly optimistic that maybe there are actually signs of some Republican pushback on some of this? I mean, I've read that Mike Johnson's in trouble.
Well, the reason there's pushback by so-called moderate Republicans in Congress is because they're all fearing the loss of their seats next
yeah.
year. And with good reason. With good reason, all you have to do is look at the way the fall 2025 elections went in New Jersey and Virginia
yes.
and Pennsylvania and in Georgia and in other parts of the country. And these victories that Democrats secured you know, the first woman governor of Virginia, a very strong feminist, mm-hmm. Abigail Spanberger, Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey, yeah. a very strong feminist. We saved the three justices in Pennsylvania that were targeted by the
right.
extreme right wing, the state Supreme Court there, which is very important for voting rights and abortion rights. So very big victories. And when you look at the numbers, what is very clear is that women saved the day, mm-hmm. literally. If only men had been allowed to vote in those races for governor in New Jersey and Virginia, we would end up with Republican governors.
Wow.
It was the massive women. Numbers of women who came out and voted for the Democrats that pulled them over the victory line. And these were huge gender gaps. 65% of all women in Virginia voted for governor-elect Spanberger,
wow.
but only 49% of men.
Hmm.
And in the under 30 category, 82% of young women voted for Spanberger. 82%.
Wow.
And 57% of young men. So you can see that women recognize the danger that Republicans hold for their fundamental rights, and they get out and they vote.
Thank goodness. I wish they'd
yes,
been there in
yes.
2024.
That's, yeah, well, in fact, the interesting thing is that young people voted at higher rates than they did in 2024. So I guess it took the, you know, it took witnessing what has been happening on the
mm-hmm.
streets and then our government policies. It was a wake-up call. You know, student loans are getting cut off.
Yeah.
So I guess it was the reason, whatever the reason, they came out and they did they voted for their fundamental rights and their interests, and we won.
Yes.
And that's the key thing. And that's why these Republicans are now very nervous about cutting off access to health care and other rights. They can see the writing on the wall. It
right.
Doesn't take a brain surgeon to see that you're going to lose your seats because women are angry. They're angry and they're voting their interests. And it's happening all across the country. And that's the very good news. It's the very good news to come out of 2025.
Wow. So maybe we'll see some Republican pushback maybe on some of these things they're going to try and enact in this Project 2026 plan they've got.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so.
Well, there will be some pushback. We'll see if they're successful because you've got a president and a leadership of the Republicans in the Congress that are determined to push back our rights and push back our progress. But I'll tell you, they're going to pay a price because
yeah.
we're going to see huge mobilization in the elections in 2026, the midterms. It is so critical that the House could be flipped back into the Democratic column by significant
yeah.
numbers. There can be a very big blue wave, and it might even pick up the Senate. It's going to pick up
Oof.
Some Senate seats. I think there's no question.
Uh-huh.
But we'll see if Democrats can get to a majority in the Senate. They can get very close with a blue wave. They may even get a majority. So that's the only reason that you're seeing Republicans hesitate right now and a little pushback and a little criticism. And they're watching Trump's numbers crater. His popularity numbers are way down. The economy is not in good shape. People
no.
are... You can't gaslight people into thinking that somehow the high prices are their own fault or that it's
exactly.
not happening.
Or that it was Biden's fault, you know.
That's right. That's right. So,
yeah.
So we're going to see things moving in the right direction. And the other reason things are moving in the right direction is that people are fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
The demonstrations in the streets are massive. People are getting involved in elections. People are deciding to run for office. People see that how fragile their rights are when you have an authoritarian who has taken power. And so I think you're going to see more and more of those kinds of grassroots demonstrations. And they have a very big impact because it mobilizes people into the elections.
Yep.
And it mobilizes people to get activated.
Yeah.
So things are moving in the right direction, and that's why I think that's very, very good news.
One can only hope, Kathy. Any other, I mean, we, in Texas, our primary is going to be in March, which has got to be mm-hmm. pretty early, one of the earliest ones around the U.S. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
Yes.
Some interesting little races there. Of course, we have our local races here. But I think, as you mentioned, I think it is overall looking a little bit more hopeful for the country, at least for those of us who care about democracy, which we do.
Right.
So...
But it takes vigilance,
yes.
Obviously, as you know, and people have to understand that there are big efforts, and Texas is a prime example of efforts to suppress the vote. Young people on college campuses frequently face obstacles to voting. Mm-hmm. Minority populations, big obstacles to voting, intimidation at the polls, and, of course, this redistricting scheme that Texas pulled off.
Exactly.
But you know what? It might backfire. It might backfire because you go and create districts that you think are more competitive for Republicans, you might just find that the Democrats are even more competitive.
Right.
So
right.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
And it has created, at least in Houston, where he's, you know, he ordered five districts to be redistricted. It has galvanized the population because now that, you know, maybe because, you know, as you know, Kathy, Texas is a non-voting state. If we all voted, we would be blue, I think. No problem.
Yeah.
But I think it's really woken people up that suddenly, wait a minute, what is my district now? And they're having to relook at that and think about it. And I think that has some value.
Yes, and the reason it's a state with lower voting rates is because of the suppression, because of the restrictions. And so people have to understand that to vote in Texas, you've got to go beyond what a voter in California has got to do. You have to be very determined to get your vote in. But how critical it is. That you vote,
yes.
How critical.
It is. So go out and vote when it comes around to that. I just do want to highlight, so we've got, I mean, we can talk about Ms. Magazine. There are some very interesting articles in the current issue. You've got one about how women's labor makes the holidays possible. You want to touch on that and how this was so derailed by the big, beautiful bill and these horrible cuts to women who need economic assistance.
Yes, you know, as we get into the holidays, we really should take a moment and appreciate that they are made possible by women's labor, which is unpaid in the household. Whether it's the cooking, the making the plans, the bringing everybody together, the holiday shopping, all of that usually disproportionately falls to women. And of course, if you no longer have access to food assistance or you've lost your job because of the government layoffs or the economic situation, it's even harder. And to always remember, these food banks have been overrun. The demand is significant. To use this chance to recognize that neighbors must take care of neighbors and must mm-hmm. watch out for each other during this period. Very, very important.
Yes.
Very important. Yeah.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us here. I mean, there is hope, I think. Thank you for giving us hope.
There is. I mean, the hope is that people are awake. They're fighting back.
Are.
They disagree with what's happening. And I think it'll be the last time people don't go out and vote, thinking their vote doesn't matter. It matters.
Every single vote. Exactly.
Yes.
Well, once again, let me ask our listeners, please go to this current issue. And I've had the pleasure of speaking with Catherine Spiller, who is the executive editor of Ms. Magazine, as well as co-founder of the Feminist Majority Foundation. Happy holidays, Kathy, and I'm sure we'll talk again in 2026.
Let's do, and thank you. Happy holidays.
All right, now we are going to go to Heather Cox Richardson and her take on the current state of affairs in this country. Stand by.
This is the Progressive Forum on KPFT. Up next, it's Letters from an American with Heather Cox Richardson.
December 16th, 2025. While President Donald J. Trump was gloating over the horrific murders of Hollywood legend Rob Reiner and his wife, photographer and producer Michelle Singer Reiner, the U.S. military yesterday struck three small boats in the eastern Pacific, killing eight people. U.S. Southern Command announced the strikes on social media, saying they were conducted at the direction of Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. It claimed that intelligence had confirmed that the vessels were engaged in narco trafficking. This brings the number of people killed in the U.S. strikes to at least 95. As Piper Hudspeth-Blackburn of CNN reports, the administration maintains the U.S. is in an armed conflict against drug cartels. But legal experts dismiss this claim and say the U.S. has no legal basis for the deadly attacks on the small boats. Notably, as Bill Kristol of The Bulwark pointed out on December 11th, the government has gotten legal justification for its actions when it can. Before the U.S. seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela last week, the government apparently secured a warrant for the seizure from a federal judge because the Treasury Department had sanctioned the ship in 2022 for illegal activities related to smuggling Iranian oil. In the case of the strikes on the small boats, though, the administration has not provided evidence of its claims either to the public or to Congress, whose permission to continue the strikes is required by the 1973 War Powers Act, if indeed the country is engaged in an armed conflict. Today, Hegseth and Secretary of State Marco Rubio briefed the House and the Senate on the strikes, but continued to refuse to show the lawmakers an unedited version of the video of a strike of September 2nd that killed two survivors of a previous strike, an event that legal analysts suggest is a war crime or murder. After he left the briefing, Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat of Connecticut, said that the administration had no legal justification for these strikes and had no national security justification for these strikes. He noted that the officers admitted that the drugs going through Venezuela were not fentanyl, as the administration has suggested, but rather primarily cocaine headed for Europe. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a Democrat of New York, called the briefing a joke. There was not a single piece of intelligence that was shared that even rises to the level of any other briefing that we've seen on Ukraine, China, anything. This was not a serious intelligence briefing. This was a communication of an opinion. Hegseth later told reporters that members of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees will be able to see the unedited video tomorrow, adding, "Of course we're not going to release a top-secret, full, unedited video of that to the general public." Ashley Murray of News from the States quoted Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat of New York, who said after the meeting, "The administration came to this briefing empty-handed. If they can't be transparent on this, how can you trust their transparency on all the other issues swirling about in the Caribbean? Every senator is entitled to see it." Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat of Delaware, said, "It's hard to square the widespread, routine, prompt posting of detailed videos of every strike with a concern that posting a portion of the video of the first strike would violate a variety of classification concerns." The Department of Justice today argued in court that Trump's ballroom project must go forward for reasons of national security, despite the lawsuit filed on Friday. The National Trust for Historic Preservation is suing to stop the project from going forward without legally required reviews and public input. Secret Service Deputy Director Matthew Quinn told the court that when Trump tore down the East Wing in October, he destroyed the security infrastructure under the building. Now, he said, any pause in construction, even temporarily, would hamper the Secret Service's ability to meet its statutory obligations and protective mission. But while Trump focuses on his architectural projects, the administration seems unable to meet other obligations. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Kash Patel is facing criticism for announcing on social media that the FBI had detained a person of interest in Saturday's mass shooting at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, that killed two and injured nine others. That individual was released hours later. This is not the first time Patel has rushed to make an announcement that later turned out to be incorrect. When asked why the FBI is having trouble locating the suspect, Trump tried to blame the university. "You'd really have to ask the school a little bit more about that, because this was a school problem," he said. "They had their own guards. They had their own police. They had their own everything. But you'd have to ask that question really to the school, not to the FBI. We came in after the fact, and the FBI will do a good job, but they came in after the fact. An interview with White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles, published in Vanity Fair today, reinforces the impression that the administration is chaotic. In 11 interviews with Wiles over the course of Trump's second term so far, journalist Chris Whipple examined the administration's handling of major issues, the destruction of USAID, deportations of immigrants, Trump's tariff war, the deployment of National Guard troops in Democratic-dominated cities, Trump's revenge against those he perceives as enemies, the destruction of Gaza, and the administration's attack on small boats from Venezuela. Wiles told Whipple that Trump has an alcoholic's personality, suggesting he cannot imagine limits on his behavior, and quoted him as judging people by their genes. That Vice President J.D. Vance converted from being a never-Trumper to a major MAGA booster for political reasons. That Director of the Office of Management and Budget Russell Vogt, a key author of Project 2025, is a right-wing absolute zealot. That Musk's reposting of a tweet about public sector workers killing millions under Hitler, Stalin, and Mao was a reflection of his drug use. And that Trump is, indeed, embarked on a project to use the power of the government to hurt people he hates. After the article appeared, Wiles issued a statement that did not say Whipple had misquoted her, but called the article a disingenuously framed hit piece on me and the finest president, White House staff, and cabinet in history. She continued, significant context was disregarded, and much of what I and others said about the team and the president was left out of the story. I assume after reading it that this was done to paint an overwhelmingly chaotic and negative narrative about the president and our team. Apparently, to demonstrate unanimity, the White House got senior officials to put out on social media statements supporting Wiles. One of the things Wiles discussed with Whipple was the administration's strikes against the small boats from Venezuela. Wiles suggested that for all his talk about drug dealers, Trump is primarily interested in regime change. He wants to keep on blowing boats up until Maduro cries uncle, Wiles told Whipple. And people way smarter than me on that say that he will. This afternoon, Trump announced he would address the nation tomorrow night. Then, at 6:46 this evening, he posted on social media, Venezuela is completely surrounded by the largest armada ever assembled in the history of South America. It will only get bigger, and the shock to them will be like nothing they have ever seen before. Until such time as they return to the United States of America, all of the oil, land, and other assets that they previously stole from us. The illegitimate Maduro regime is using oil from these stolen oil fields to finance themselves, drug terrorism, human trafficking, murder, and kidnapping. For the theft of our assets and many other reasons, including terrorism, drug smuggling, and human trafficking, the Venezuelan regime has been designated a foreign terrorist organization. Therefore, today, I am ordering a total and complete blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers going into and out of Venezuela. The illegal aliens and criminals that the Maduro regime has sent into the United States during the weak and inept Biden administration are being returned to Venezuela at a rapid pace. America will not allow criminals, terrorists, or other countries to rob, threaten, or harm our nation. And likewise will not allow a hostile regime to take our oil, land, or any other assets, all of which must be returned to the United States immediately. Thank you for your attention to this matter. Senator Andy Kim, a Democrat of New Jersey, noted that the threatened military action directly contradicts what Secretaries Rubio and Hegseth told my Senate colleagues and I today about the mission and goals of their operations in the Caribbean. This is a dangerous escalation, and this administration must come before Congress for public hearings and explain to the American people why they are risking pulling us into another forever war.
Letters from an American was written and read by Heather Cox Richardson. It was produced at Soundscape Productions, Dedham, Massachusetts. recorded with music composed by Michael Moss.
A Bird's Eye View, A Woman's Perspective, with Lillian Kerr. This article comes from the website A Mighty Girl, and it talks about the Mirabal Sisters of the Dominican Republic. Rafael Trujillo, the brutal fascist dictator who ruled the Dominican Republic for over three decades, once admitted, "My only problems are the Catholic Church and the Mirabal Sisters." Trujillo had seized power through a military coup in 1930, and his authoritarian regime used intimidation, imprisonment, torture, and murder to maintain control, with tens of thousands dying under his rule. That three young women from a prominent, well-to-do family could rise to become leaders of the underground resistance, so formidable that the far-right dictator himself named them as his primary threat, is a testament to their extraordinary courage and determination. When Minerva, Patria, and Maria Teresa were assassinated by Trujillo's henchmen on November 25, 1960, they became instant martyrs and national heroes. In 1999, the United Nations designated November 25th as the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, making it the start of the 16 days of activism against gender violence that concludes on December the 10th, International Human Rights Day, thus connecting the Mirabal Sisters' legacy directly to the global fight for human rights. The Mirabal Sisters' path to resistance began in 1949, when their family attended a social event with Rafael Trujillo, where the dictator made unwanted advances toward Minerva. When he became aggressive and physical, she slapped him in the face, and the family left the party early. In retaliation, her father was imprisoned and subjected to brutal treatment, dying shortly after his release. Minerva and her parents were arrested, their property was seized, and the family finances were ruined. Later, Minerva and her mother were held under house arrest at a hotel where Trujillo tried to coerce Minerva into sleeping with him to secure their release, which she refused. After graduating law school summa cum laude, Minerva was denied her license to practice law. She met fellow activist Manolo Tavares Justo at university, and they married in 1955, becoming resistance leaders together. Her younger sister, Maria Teresa, soon joined the movement. Patria, the eldest, initially resisted involvement, but joined after witnessing a brutal massacre perpetrated by Trujillo's forces on June 14, 1959. The sisters and their husbands became key figures in organizing opposition to the dictatorship. Together, Patria, Minerva, and Maria Teresa formed an underground opposition group called the Movement of the 14th of June, named in memory of the massacre that had galvanized Patria into action. The sisters distributed pamphlets containing the names of people killed by Trujillo. Within the resistance movement, they adopted the code name Las Mariposas, the butterflies, originally Minerva's underground name. Despite knowing the grave risks they faced, the sisters remained undeterred. As Maria Teresa declared, "Perhaps what we have most near is death, but that does not frighten me. We shall continue to fight for that which is just." Minerva and Maria Teresa were imprisoned on several occasions and subjected to torture along with their husbands. The regime's crackdown intensified, but international pressure eventually forced Trujillo's hand. After the Organization of American States condemned his regime and sent observers to the Dominican Republic, the sisters were freed as a supposed gesture of leniency, but their husbands remained imprisoned. The women began making regular visits to see their husbands at the remote prison in Puerto Plata, traveling across dangerous mountain roads. On November 25, 1960, after one such prison visit, the three sisters and their driver were ambushed on their return journey.
They were beaten to death in a cane field. Then their bodies were stuffed back into the vehicle and pushed over a cliff to simulate an accident. No one believed the regime's story. The martyrdom of the Mirabal sisters instantly helped solidify resistance to Trujillo both at home and abroad. 6 months later, facing mounting pressure from all sides and having lost military support, Trujillo himself was assassinated on May 30, 1961. The sisters have long been revered as national heroes in the Dominican Republic for their extraordinary courage in standing against tyranny. A fourth sister, Dede Mirabal, survived and dedicated the remainder of her life to raising her sister's 6 children alongside her own and preserving their legacy through the establishment of a museum in their childhood home. She became the keeper of their story, ensuring that Las Mariposas would never be forgotten. Dede passed away in 2014 at the age of 88. As we close out International Human Rights Day on December the 10th, we honor not only the extraordinary courage of Minerva, Patria, and Maria Teresa, but also all those who continue their fight for justice, dignity, and freedom. The sister's sacrifice reminds us that human rights are not abstract principles. They are won through the bravery of individuals willing to stand against tyranny. Their legacy calls us to sustain action in defense of human rights everywhere and to remember that the fight for a world free from oppression and violence requires the courage and commitment of all of us. To learn more about their heroic story, there's an acclaimed historical fictional novel about the Mirabal sisters, The Time of the Butterflies. And this has been Lillian Kerr with a bird's eye view.
This is the news on the Progressive Forum. The Honduran Attorney General has announced an international arrest warrant has been issued for Honduran former President Juan Orlando Hernandez. Convicted drug trafficker Juan Orlando Hernandez was pardoned by President Trump and released from prison in the United States on December 2nd. Juan Orlando Hernandez was president of Honduras from 2014 to 2022. He was convicted on drug trafficking charges in the United States last year. He was serving a 45-year sentence. The Honduran Attorney General said he had instructed the government and Interpol, International Police, to execute the warrant against Mr. Hernandez. The charges that Mr. Hernandez faces in Honduras stem from what is known as the Pandora case. Honduran prosecutors explain that between the years 2010 and 2013, a corrupt network of Honduran lawmakers and others diverted public funds through private foundations, then funneled those funds into political campaigns. That corrupt funding included Juan Orlando Hernandez's 2013 political campaign. Less than a month after leaving office in 2022, Juan Orlando Hernandez was arrested and later extradited to the United States to face drug trafficking and weapons charges. When he was sentenced to 45 years in prison, United States authorities said he had played a central role in one of the largest and most violent drug trafficking conspiracies in the world. China has launched a new desalination facility in Shandong that converts seawater into ultra-pure freshwater at a cost of just 28 cents per cubic meter. This is less expensive than many sources of regular tap water. Simultaneously, this desalination plant generates green hydrogen gas along with mineral-rich brine for industrial uses. The project demonstrates how an integrated water and energy system can deliver both economic and environmental benefits in resource-constrained regions of the world. The facility operates using seawater alone. It relies on low-grade waste heat from nearby steel and petrochemical plants. Data from the desalination project indicates that processing seawater produces ultra-pure water, green hydrogen gas, and a mineral-rich brine. This transforms a single resource stream into 3 valuable outputs, minimizing waste and maximizing resource productivity. The plant's energy requirement is relatively low at roughly 4 kilowatt hours per cubic meter of hydrogen gas produced. This contributes to its economic viability and strengthens the case for replicating similar models in coastal or water-stressed regions that have access to waste heat sources. By combining desalination, green hydrogen generation, and byproduct utilization into a single process, the facility demonstrates how circular approaches can support industrial decarbonization, enhance water security, and contribute to cleaner energy systems in the years ahead. And in the final story, Israel's domination of the Levant is built not only on land theft and military occupation, but also on a regional system of colonialism that weaponizes rivers, aquifers, and water infrastructure to enforce dependence and control. The Levant is a geographical and cultural region encompassing parts of modern-day occupied Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and Cyprus. Water is not just a natural resource in the Levant region. Water is the foundation of sovereignty, survival, and power. In this region, the deliberate control and redirection of water to entrench colonial domination forms part of the infrastructure of the Israeli occupation project. From the aquifers of the West Bank, the rivers of Lebanon, to the snow-fed headwaters of Jabal al-Sheikh, or Mount Hermon, Israel has built a colonial order that captures and weaponizes water. The case of water colonialism in the Levant demonstrates that scarcity is man-made, produced by systems of political and military domination by Israel. In Palestine, water scarcity is shaped by Israeli policies that determines who drinks water and who does not, who farms and who must abandon their land, and who is made dependent and who dictates the region's future. Since 1967, Israel has asserted complete control over Palestinian water, requiring permits which are almost never granted, or drilling wells, laying pipes, or repairing infrastructure. In the West Bank, settlers enjoy irrigated gardens and swimming pools, while Palestinian villages must ration water by the bucket. In Gaza, Israeli intentional destruction of water and sewage systems is almost total. According to UNICEF, nearly every drop of Gaza's groundwater is now unfit for human consumption. Israel prohibits the repair of pipes and wells, then it bombs whatever infrastructure remains. That's been some of the news on the Progressive Forum.
Thank you.
Once again, thank you for tuning in to the Progressive Forum here on KPFT 90.1 FM. Tune in again next week, Christmas week, and I think stay tuned. We will have People of Earth coming up next. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. This has been Lillian Kerr, and good night.
KPFT Artist Profile.
Hi, I'm Carrie Melanson. KPFT has been completely, totally influential in my musical life, and I think the entire Houston music scene is a beacon for music arts, songwriting, Americana, roots music, things that you can't hear anywhere else. It's amazing. It's the local flavor that when you're driving across the country, you hope to find, you know, while you're on a road trip or something. You're not just hearing the same stuff on the streaming platforms, whatever, and you get to hear what's here. You get to hear what came here before, and it's really great. It's an education that everybody needs to hear these incredible songs. It's just an amazing opportunity for local and regional musicians.
Listen for his music and other independent artists here on KPFT Houston.
Ready to shake up your Tuesdays? Check out Discovered, your new fun and funky afternoon audio playground from 3 to 6 p.m. here on KPFT. Hi, I'm Elise. Join me as we jump musical timelines together, all in the name of twisting up some fresh fun inside a multitude of musical genres. The kind of music that'll keep you guessing and grooving. Come get Discovered Tuesdays, 3 to 6 p.m. here on 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic KPFT of a forest. Houston.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Want to do radio? KPFT is looking for programmers and board ops. If this sounds like you, contact me, Marlo Blue, at pdkpft@gmail.com or leave a message at 713-526-4000 extension 1003. Hey, KPFT is looking for you.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Clint Broussard, host of Long Time Running. As a programmer, I do my best to provide you with a soundtrack to each morning as musically diverse as the city that this radio station